Usually this shmooze is about Hanukkah. I don't want to talk about Hanukkah, but I want to talk about nowadays we have to live through Hanukkah, but what we'll be living through, which I think we live through it on a regular basis. In a certain sense, Hanukkah was the first time a Kaiser was challenged with a culture, which in many ways they found tempting. They found it fascinated them, the culture of the Bavliim. They, at some level, they got involved in Parsiim, because I'll say Parsiim, where their issue was Taiva. Taiva is something they married Nashim Machrius, the Pesukim talk about, etc. But here's it was a world where the Yavona came along and they were intellectual, you know, they appealed to the world, the worldview of the Jews in many ways, and it was very challenging for the Yidden to disengage. And there was Yidden which became Misiavnim, they became Yavonim. I mean, there's no nusach anywhere which you find anywhere. There's a lotion of people who were misbablim or misparsim. There's no people which became parsim or became bablim, but there's people who became yavonim, misyavnim. You find such a nusach. So there was a musach of misyavnim. But it was a culture which, in many ways, the yidden were grappling with how to respond to it, how to deal with it. And the truth is, I want to talk about that. I just want to talk about that. Bacher goes through high school. Bacher goes off there to learn. In a certain sense, many ways, he's not grappling with the culture and society around him. There's temptations, etc. But Betsy, he lives in his own bubble. He lives in his own bubble, which is the bubble of yeshiva. You know, whatever it is, Eretz Yisrael for sure. He lives in his own bubble. A person comes back and he starts going to college. A person actually goes off to work, and all of a sudden he finds himself placed in a society which he's in some level there's immersion in that society. A person can be in hours and hours and hours and he's exposed to different worldview than his worldview. He's exposed to different culture than his culture. It's a multicultural experience. Is the watchword nowadays. We have to respect other people's cultures, etc. And the Jew is the bacher, the young lady, you know, is grappling with many different challenges. He's challenged at many different levels. He's challenging levels. There's a halacha question that he has to deal with, which maybe they're uncomfortable or they're challenging. He has a challenge in that. There's Hilchos of Yichud. A person called me up, so, you know, so he has a meeting with you know. So nowadays, you know, many positions are open for women. So his manager is a woman. So she calls him into the office. So he can't. He doesn't dictate the circumstances of how that meeting takes place. There's Yichud questions. What is it? He has to present his position on that. He found it uncomfortable. The challenges in Ashkafa and Haga. A person wants to fit in. A person wants. We have many of us have this inclination. We like to people to think to be friendly with us. We like people to respect us, and from the value system of the society around us, what we're doing in many ways they feel is strange. It's weird. It's antiquated. Right. So if I want people's respect, and they think that I'm antiquated and weird, I don't have the respect. So that leaves me in a very uncomfortable position. Then in the positive sense, the person walks around with a feeling of a responsibility of Kiddush Hashem. He's seen very many times to be the interpreter of the Torah Judaism's attitudes. You know, well, what does the Torah say about this? What do you Orthodox Jews say about this? You know, I don't know those things, you know. I'm not a rabbi. You look like a rabbi. Like, what do you mean? You don't know your own religion? Like, you know, like that if they don't say it, that's what they're, you know, you get these type of questions. So those are challenges. I can't tell you I'm the biggest bookie in the modern society. I'm not. Just a few thoughts. Rabbi Yaakov Emden said a fascinating horror. Rabbi Yaakov Emden said a fascinating horror. He says that, you know, you look at the history of Klal Yisrael, with the exception, maybe one very very notable exception, but the history of Klal Yisrael, that there was tremendous amount of effort amongst the Goyim to force the Yidden to convert and to assimilate into the society. And they, for the most, with the exception of what happened in Spain, they were not successful. You know, the history of the Jews in France and in Germany and Poland, etc., was very unsuccessful. You had individual here, individual there, became a mashumid, etc. But the most Jews chose Kiddush Hashem, poverty, whatever it was, not to become part of the society around them. The walls of the ghetto come tumbling down, right? And now things seem much easier, and things seem much lighter, and seems to be much, and bam! Right, that's it. All of a sudden, there's Jews converting left and right. Or right, Moses Mendelssohn has the distinction of having that all of his grandchildren were Catholics. Right, that's all of his children converted to be able to become part of the society around them. So they withstood the temptation of the pressure. And what happened? He says that there was one thing that the Goyim accomplished all the generations. They accomplished in putting into the mind of the Jew that the Goy is on top and the Jew is on bottom. Now, the Jew recognized that he can't join the society over there. They would never accept him anyway. The Jew recognized that he'd have to get, that there is, when it's being forced upon him, he didn't want to do it. But that crept into the minds of the Jew is that it's good to be a goy. So when they finally gave him an opportunity, the walls came down. He says, "Let's do it. Let's join." He says, "What was destroyed was Jewish pride. Jewish pride was destroyed. The musig that you're the Amma Nivcher, the musig that you're the school of Mikolo Amim, the musig that you have something extraordinary and special." And you have nothing to be embarrassed from what the society has to offer, that was damaged. If that's damaged, so then everything is a challenge. Everything is a challenge. So a person goes into society, and he's not convinced. He doesn't have the pride and understanding of what he has. And somebody says to me, like, looks at you with, like, you know, what you're doing is archaic and antiquated. So you're uncomfortable. What I'm doing is not antiquated and not archaic. It happens to be very, very modern, very, 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 very sophisticated. All right, the society around me is doing something which is very antiquated. You know, it's basically Mitzrayim did the same thing. You know, and Rome did the same thing. They all right. Rome before it was finally destroyed, because part of it was destroyed is because they became a society which basically was Mishka Zacharnik. I mean, like, nothing new under the sun. I'm overstating it, but that's not my point. The point is, I have nothing to be embarrassed of, but we're not, but we are. We are. I have to tell you that I have I want to understand something. I want to use the right word. I have a perverse respect for politically savvy people who take advantage of people's minds incorrectly. You have to be impressed with what they do to our minds. I'm impressed with it. It's bad. Right. Maybe in the Moshe, this is totally an aside. I told you the story before. But, you know, the Moshe, look, we take a certain pride in sometimes, and it's a certain chop. Even the chop is almost horrible. But we have pride in the chop. This is totally an aside, but I mentioned this story before, that there's a fellow that lived in Long Island. He comes home one day and his car is missing. right? So he calls the police, and that, you know, the guy lives in Long Island. This car wasn't hit, a 98 Toyota Sienna with 250,000 miles on it, 26,000 miles on it, you know. It was a late model, fancy, expensive car. It comes back, you know, police can't find the car. 2 days later, the car's sitting in his driveway. Returns, nothing, totally fine, nothing, no problems with it, with a note. The note basically goes along the lines of, says, "Dear sir, I feel horrible for taking your car. My wife was expecting. I needed to get her to the hospital. She was having contractions, and I'm an ex-con. I know how to steal a car. And I was planning to turn that night, but I came back and the police were there. I have a criminal record. It would be all over for me. So I waited till they returned. Please, I apologize." You know, okay, now listen, in New York, stranger things happen. The guy, you know, so the fellow, and it says in a token appreciation, he bought him two tickets for the latest Broadway show. Okay, all right. Guy says, listen, you know, things can happen. You know, two tickets to the latest Broadway show is great. He can take his wife out to the latest Broadway show. Comes home and his house is totally empty. Two people drove up while they were away. It was 2 hours into Manhattan, 2 hours back, and 2 hours for the show. Plus, you take your wife out afterwards to dinner. So he guaranteed the guys away for 8 to 10 hours. They moved up a moving van up to the house, and they emptied out the whole house while they were. That was the story. All right, it's a gewaltige chap, right? It's a gewaltige chap. You know, it's a, we have a law from a chap how a person lied, stole, and used goodness of somebody's heart against them, and we enjoy it, right? Sometimes I get, you know, it's wrong. Like the Bershom has, like, tremendous pain. This guy's such a good head. He said he should use it for good things instead of, you know, using it for gnevas, you know. Okay. So sometimes, you know, you have to spoil from the politicians or how that they're very good at what they do, you know. Like, they're very good at what they do, you know. So Obama, he has a problem with his Obamacare, so he says, okay, now everybody can keep the thing. Now, all insurance company says, we can't do it. But now, he's not the villain. The insurance company is the villain. So he's great. He smells like a rose. And the insurance company is the problem. He's so smart. He's perverse. He's smart. But he's perverted, right? Right? So that comes along the Mishkan Zachar Society. And says this is all about rights. It's about rights. They want to have the same rights as everybody else. Now, and our society says, oh yeah, rights. The holy grail of our society is rights, you know. Right? I'm sorry, the Avodah Zarah, whatever, okay. Right? Of our society is, I can't use an English phrase that nobody knows what it means. It's rights. Oh yeah, it's rights. It's rights. It's talking, you know. It's like, you know, everybody's rights nowadays. You know, it's that. There's animals' rights, and there's babies' rights. You can't. It's not fair to be piecemeal to them. And there's trees' rights. So you shouldn't hurt the trees. Right? Now, if you want to kill a child in Rechamimoy, that's okay. But that's, you know, that's because they don't have rights. But everybody else has rights. Right? So they come along and they say that there's rights. What's the rights? As far as I'm concerned, Batson, I don't understand. I have a big time on the IRS. You know, there's inequality in our society. I'm sorry, this is a political schmooze. Just excuse me for one second. Right. There's an inequality in our society. People which are married get treated better than people which are single. They have a better tax rate. There are many incentives, etc. It's not fair. I think there should be a movement called Singles' Rights. So now, but why does the IRS allow that? Because the answer is the government came along and said that they decided that they have a right to promote what they feel is beneficial for society because it's good for them. So the same way, you have to know there is tremendous incentives to buy a home. The government gives you many subsidies to buy a home. You get it the first time for it. You have, especially if it's in D.C., because in D.C. they have a special law in D.C. First-time homeowner gets a special tax credit. You get a mortgage tax credit. And, you know, there's wonderful things you get for buying a home. Why? I mean, I think the people who are apartment dwellers, their rights are being abused. We should make it an apartment dweller's rights. Because the society came along and said, correctly so, that it's beneficial for society. They decided it's beneficial for society for people to live in their own home. Therefore, they're going to promote something which is beneficial for society. There's nothing to do with rights. Marriage has nothing to do with rights. Because as rights, the single people should have to give all the ketanas. Marriage has to do with, it's good that the Chachamim made this country decided that marriage makes people happy. And people are happy, you're productive. And therefore we're going to promote marriage, not because it's your right, it's because the society benefits from it. Kimmel and Mishael says, we have rights to be like everybody else who's married. Nobody has any rights. But our whole society has rights. Right? I mean, the whole thing's ridiculous. But they got you all to believe it. Like, there's a society of, you know, of 300 million Americans who believe that that's the issue. You have to respect them. That they're very good at, you know, at their game. The only value which our society has is that everybody has a right to decide whatever they want. That's the only right, which is left. You have autonomy. That's the only because you can't inject any responsibilities upon a person. The only thing which you can assess a person is he should act properly in society, because otherwise nobody will be able to get their own benefits. A society which is an anarchy, I can't get what I need. So I'm going to be nice to you, because like the postmistress has an office, because otherwise, without the rishus, ish is reo chayim b'lo'oi. We swallow each other alive. Right? No chidushim, it's, you know, it's 2,000 years old. But otherwise, it's all about me. So, you know, if the woman says she wants to get rid of a child, let's get rid of a child. So we said, we're protecting the child's rights. Remember, Tadamo had his mice last week. He was, you know, he was in D.C. 2 weeks ago, he was in D.C., you know, right by his shul over there. So he's walking by. There was a protest in front of the White House, a protest against anti-bris milah, anti-circumcision protest going on. So Rabbi Tadamo's walking by, and he obviously looks like Rabbi Tadamo. Like, you know, says, "Sir, what do you think?" Right? Of course, there's all these spectators watching. It's the stupidest thing in the world. Don't set up with Rabbi Tadamo when it comes to these things. Don't set up with Rabbi Tadamo. Right? So Rabbi Tadamo says to the gentleman, he says, "I imagine you believe in abortion." Right? He says, "What do you think? It's not fair to the child. The child has rights." So he says, "I imagine you believe in abortion." He says, "Of course." He says, "So you're telling me that to kill a child without asking his permission is okay, but to take off a little bit of skin without his permission is a problem." And he walked away. And he said, the people were watching, started clapping. And the poor activist left there standing with his mouth wide open. But that's our society. Now we walk into the office, and somebody looks at me like, you know, I'm this mean guy. I don't respect Mishka Zachar's rights. So I'm archaic. If you don't respect people's rights, there's something wrong with you. You're not a nice person. You're this fire-breathing extremist. And that's what we feel like when we walk into the office. And we don't like being looked at as fire-breathing extremists, so we're uncomfortable. But we would stop and understand exactly, but before the question, the Torah's Minister Mayim, etc., that they stand on nothing. The whole thing is an edifice of cards which a couple could become. We wouldn't be embarrassed. But we never thought it through. And we're talking challenged. But when instead we're standing with an intelligent position, right? And let's say I don't know the intelligent position. That's a problem. I don't know the intelligent position, but I have enough confidence to understand that the Bereshit knows what he's doing, and therefore that there is an intelligent position. So, from that vantage point, I can work with the person next to me. So you know what? So why do you think global warming is such an issue? Where animal rights is such an issue, because we need to preserve the society. Why do we need to preserve society? Like, why is that so important? Because you want to leave something over for our children. So I also leave something for my children. I want to give them a legacy, a value, what's important now. Like, why are you worried about? We're worried about Chas v'Sholem. I just read the 26-page. decision of the Supreme Court, right, in the fight of Kiryas Yearl against the Grumet, you know, when they Kiryas Yearl in the 1990s tried to stop Monroe, as they call it in English, you know, Monroe, right, you know, the Satmar's city, right. They had special eds. They had special education needs for their children. They tried to make a school district called Kiryas Yearl, like any other city. So they made a school district called Kiryas Yearl, and they now get special needs education from the state. And the state legislator of New York agreed to that. So, but there's some guy from that didn't like it. You know, some of these Jewish activists who don't like establishment of the church and state. So they challenged it and went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court wrote this final decision, which they lost the case. And one of the consenters to the decision, besides what the decision was written, he wanted to add his own two cents. So he wrote his own two cents. And he said that, anything which we're going to do, which is going to convince the child to go in the religion of their parents, would be construed as an act of establishment of religion by the state, which is illegal. That's what he wrote. So I said, this is my Supreme Court justice. I'm out of here because there's no such law. So I thank God. One of the dissenters said, that sounds more like a declaration of a manifesto of secular liberalism than it is the constitutional law. There's something wrong with having a child maintain the religion of his parents. But that's what he believes. That's something illegal for the government to do. Okay, so if that's the society that we live in, so why is global warming a problem? So the world will collapse 1,000 years from now. Who cares? Why do you feel so driven to leave a world for the next generation? Just enjoy yourself, and who cares? Because we have responsibility. Who gave you that responsibility? We came from an amoeba, and we're going back to a big crunch at the end. Who cares? They never asked that question. But you should. Why do you care? And if the person's an honest person, says, "I don't know why I care." So I'll tell you why you care, because God put in your DNA that we care about things. And you happen to use it in that sense. I once had a fellow, Kirov, he said, "I don't need Torah. I have this very strong moral sense of right and wrong." I said, "That's wonderful. Who gave it to you? Where do you think you got it from?" Like, monkeys don't have a very strong sense of right and wrong. And you go to the zoo, and you have to remember, my wife, it was years ago. Luz was 4 or 5 years old. She goes to the zoo, she comes back, and she's like, "Punch," and she looks like she's sick. He says, "She sent us to this woman, very fancy looking woman, obviously very lettered, PhD, this and the other thing. Look at our cousins! Look at our cousins by the monkey house. She was sick." So why do our cousins not have a sense of moral right and wrong, and we do? Where did it come from? So I walk into my office, and I'm uncomfortable with the guy next to me. Why? He has the moral high ground. He has a monopoly on what makes sense. Second issue, which I think is even more challenging, is our own selves. Forget about the guy next to me, it's our own selves. Rav Chaim Brisk has a fascinating horror. They asked him this is a letter to Rav Dessen. Rav Dessen wrote this letter. This is a kind of gimel of Mr. Milieu. That I'm not going to, can't do justice to the whole conversation. But basically, the question which Chaim was addressing was the difference between the educational system in Lithuania and that in Germany. The fact that in Germany, Rav Hirsch's system was able to create balabatim with tremendous conviction of Torah ideals and values as balabatim. It says in Lithuania, they were falling like flies and becoming fry. So why is that? That was the question which was being addressed in this letter, right? Sounds like an interesting letter, right? So he answered, this is Rav Chaim answered that in Germany, the main message, Rav Hirsch's message is that there's not any part of the day that you do that you're not serving a Kodesh Baruch Hu. There's nothing that you do the whole day that's not service to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Torah Derech Eretz doesn't mean you need to become a secular person. Torah Derech Eretz, as opposed to Torah and Mada, Torah Derech Eretz means that there's not any moment in your day that you're not some way serving a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And therefore, he hired teachers in his school to teach the sciences as a way to person to understand the greater understanding of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And history is a way to understand the Kodesh Baruch Hu acting through the processes of history. And to train the people to think every single thing that you're doing is always about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. There's not a moment in your day they're not serving Kodesh Baruch Hu. There's a Gemara Ksubas that I learned last year. Gemara Ksubas Dafnon. The Gemara says, "Oisus pasuk etilim kuvav, oisus taka b'chol, oisus taka b'chol eis." Gemara says, "How's a person do taka b'chol eis? Zeh zon adam shezon u'mefarnes bonav b'nei beisa." Says a person who's working, if he has the right understanding of what he's doing, he's working because he has responsibility to his family. So every single moment that he's working, every single moment that he's thinking about his work, every single moment that he's in his job, he is serving a Kodesh Baruch Hu by being responsible to take care of his family. He's always stalking b'chol eis. Every single moment that he has, he's being over to Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's what the pasuk says. It's Chazal's Uptaich. Awesome under Uptaich. So from that vantage point, so work is also about Hashem. So the temptations, you know, I'm being over to Kodesh Baruch Hu. I put on my gartel, you know, virtually, because I'm in Germany, right? I put on my gartel, but I go to work. He didn't work on the kaimitz to say, shall kiddush Hashem. He didn't work on the kaimitz to say, shall being marba kurt shemayim boilam. The way you act, the way you understand. He says, but in that society, in that climate, you can't raise Gedolei Torah. There's no Gedolei Torah which came out of Germany. The Rosh Hashivas of the Yeshivas in Germany were Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, who learned in Slobodka, and Rabbi Israel Hindershaber, who learned by the Aruch Liner, you know, in the old Austria beforehand. There was Rabbi Leo Kaplan, who learned in Slobodka. Right? They imported the Rosh Hashivas because the message wasn't that Torah is up there and everything else is down here. Everything's equal. So I'm not uncomfortable to who I am. I'm by becoming a doctor, or becoming a lawyer, or becoming whatever I'm doing. I'm being able to Kodesh Baruch at that moment. So what am I? I don't feel bad about myself. I feel very comfortable with myself. In Lithuania, the message was Torah is here and everything else is down here. So the people made it to Torah. So you made Gedolei. You also have people who didn't make it to Torah felt so uncomfortable with themselves they went off to Derech. That was Reb Chaim's uptight. Now, says, which one is better? That I'm not discussing right now. It's not the topic of this room. You can read the letter yourself if you want. But imagine, that's what happens to the yeshiva bachur nowadays. Right? The chinuch of the Lithuanian yeshivas is Torah. Right? Torah. And we want that. We want the bachur to get the message that, you know, the godless Adam is the person who comes to God of Torah. You go to the Hasidim, so I mean, you know, with the exception of the Rebbe and a few, you know, Zakenim, the car mechanic during the week and the base medrash Rebbe get the same kavod on Shabbos when it comes to Aliyahs, you know. That was the mahal of Hasidus, the Dafka. Except for the Rebbe, everybody else was we're all the same. In the world of the Litvisha Yeshivas, no, the Talmud Chacham was put on a pedestal. Because this way, your heroes when you're growing up was Reb Chaim Oizer and the Chofetz Chaim. Your hero was a Reb Shlomo Chanan Spector. That was your hero. Like, and everybody, like, you know, everybody wanted to be like him, you know. And I'm not sure who the hero is, you know, for the American young man. Probably no hero nowadays. Like, I don't know who. Like the president? I don't know. But like, what? You know, who? The sports people? I don't know. There's no heroes anymore. But they had heroes. But their heroes were... So now the guy leaves yeshiva and goes to work. So what am I? Who am I? What's my value? The person is grappling with inside of himself. So now when he's doing that, and he has to then present himself vis-a-vis the society, so yes, society will make inroads, because he's not comfortable inside of his own skin. That's our modern day Hanukkah issue. That the Yidden, you know, weren't comfortable in their own skin, they became Misyavnim. We're not comfortable within our own skin. So, we're tempted. Okay, so listen, you know. So then you start seeing. You're not going back to where you came from. You can't put the jack back in the box. So I'm not there anymore. So I'm here. I don't know what this is, but I didn't make it there. Let me at least make it here. So then I buy into some of the values. I buy into some of the goals in the society, because at least I'll feel good about myself that way. Because I'm not trying to feel good about myself the other way. I'm not giving you answers. I'm just understanding. Why do you understand what the challenge is? The answers are not easy. The answers are challenging. But that's the challenge that a person faces when he walks out into the society. And we got a Gemara Ksuvos. We have the Ar Chazal which address it. But those aren't the ones that they say the Shmuzin about on Sunday night in Yeshiva, usually. You know, the standard Hanukkah Shmuzin is about learning Torah. Not about that, you know. That's what Hanukkah is about, learning Torah, which one it is, right? And that's the message that Baruch should get. So when's the Bachar supposed to get the message? And if I don't end up staying in Torah, what am I? Who am I? When does he get that? When do you get that message? That's an important message also. How am I ready to deal with being in that society and saying, you know what? I'm comfortable with what I am. I know that I'm a Ben Torah. No matter where I am, what do I do? Right now I'm doing something else. And that's Taka Gemara Ksuvos. I'm being Oysa B'Staka B'Choleis. Right now, at this moment. It was a cheshvan made with B'seichel, being a siyatz with somebody who has maybe a better understanding, possibly. And this is the decision, this is the right place for me. This is the right place for you, that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do. So I'm less of a person? I'm not less of a person. I have, you know, I don't mean it as a, you know, I'm not denigrating one way. I had a conversation with one young man, went out, they said, you know, I told him, says, listen, you go to work, you need to wear white color. You don't have to wear a white shirt in the office. You don't have to wear a white shirt in the office. Nowadays, wearing a white shirt, it's strange. It's totally strange. You know, you just want to fit in the, I don't say, but on Sunday, you have to wear a white shirt. That's all. Says, you're Ben Torah. So when you're in the office, you have to wear the clothing of the office. Sunday, you're not going to work, so why shouldn't you wear a white shirt? You're Ben Torah. Ben Torah, till now, you decided that that's the definition of a Ben Torah. Maybe right, maybe wrong. But the fact that you're not wearing it, it means you're telling yourself, I'm not that bacher I was in yeshiva anymore. Why is that true? You are the bacher you were in yeshiva, but the same yeshivas that you had before. Happened to me, you're going to work from Monday to Friday. I said, I don't care what color shirt you wear, but you do. You're defining yourself by what color shirt you're wearing. You do. So you better do it right. Who are you? You're the same guy you were yesterday. Happened to me that you're working. Tell me, he came to the halakha to himself. I said, good. And it just reminds us that this end of my story with her palm. Reb Aaron Chazan. So after her palm was, before her palm actually. So after Rav was nifter, so the Sheba in Tarbadas was Rebbe Chazan. He used to daven in Chaim Berlin in Shabbos. He lived near Chaim Berlin. So he used to go for Yontel. He used to daven right next to him. So he wore a short jacket. He didn't wear kapatza. During the week, he wore a kapatza. because he was in Tarbid Das, he's the Rosh Hashiva. In Shabbos, he's in Chaim Berlin, he's not the Rosh Hashiva in Chaim Berlin, so he's a balabos. He wore a short jacket. Somebody asked him, you know, what's Pshat? He says, listen, that, I don't wear work clothes on Shabbos. You don't have to define by your clothing. And he wasn't defined by his clothing. And that was very clear to him. Like, you know, I'm the same person whether I'm wearing my kapata or not. Misad b'bochem, they need to give me kavod on during the weekdays. I have to wear kapata when I'm in yeshiva. And Shabbos, on Yom Tov, I'm in Chaim Berlin, so what's up and talking on kapata? I was there when the person asked the question. It was a great line, right? But it was a person who was so comfortable in his own skin, he didn't need it. But a person who's not there, you have to understand that these things, because I'll say that you're begotten or you're mechabdusa. You need to define yourself. I'm going to find myself in the office and I wear the same jeans as everybody else. You know, I'm defining myself. And you have to be aware of those things. There's so many different things, kudas, that you have to be aware of. You didn't diminish because you made a decision, which is an important decision. It was the right decision. You didn't diminish. And don't sell yourself short. Yes, you're not as firm as you used to be because there are many different issues, etc. So that's another part of the conversation which you had earlier in the Shmooze, you know. You're not going to solve all the world's problems in 33 minutes, or even 38 minutes. Okay? I want to put the question out to you. That all these issues of the person redefining himself and he feeling guilty and feeling depressed and feeling sad and feeling, you know, not sure who he is, it's not coming from Yetzer Tov, it's coming from Yetzer Hara. And from that vantage point, a person says, you know, I know what I am, I know how I define myself properly, and I'm going to define myself by that. I'm going to be who I am, and I don't have to be overwhelmed by the society around me. To have that clarity, understanding our special position vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Klal Yisrael as a whole, each member of Klal Yisrael is a prat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a very special place for us as a member of Klal Yisrael. We are a member of the Avanimachar. We are special people. And from that vantage point, we will not be thrown around by the winds of the society around us.